Hello everyone, welcome to the Local Shop Podcast. This is the podcast for all things shop related, convenience sector related. And today we're doing a bit of a deep dive on a short advice, which is one of the things that we've been really keen on getting out to members over the last few years. Okay, I'm joined today by Philip Lashirley from Bucks and Surrey Training Standards. And Philip has been with us for quite a few years now in various guises. He spent a good few months locked in the office on secondment with us while we were developing a short advice in the first instance. So Phil, thanks for joining me today. Can you just give us a brief overview of how this all got started? How did Primary Authority start? How did a short advice start? Right from the beginning of when it was sure. You know, came into inception.
So it's around about 2005. The government looked at the way that businesses were being treated by regulators, and they were particularly keen on whether there was any examples of differences in interpretation of the law, differences in approach, whether businesses were being repeatedly asked for the same information. And out of that, the 2008 Regulatory Enforcement and Sanctions Act came out, which basically created the Primary Authority Scheme, which meant that if you followed advice from your primary authority partner, it means that you could have assurance that that advice would be respected by other local authorities.
So is it safe to say that investigation found that there were differences in interpretation of the law between different authorities?
Absolutely, and I think that's natural considering the hundreds of different authorities there are, the hundreds of different bits of legislation that training standards and environment, health and fire officers have to deal with. And what primary authority does is it just brings everything into a nice, consistent framework.
Yeah, you know? So you pick one authority which doesn't have to be the one that you're in. It can just be an authority that offers this, and ours is Bucks and Surrey, but covers all of England and Wales. And then the advice that authority offers, that is the primary authority that you follow. And then if there are any issues with training standards or environmental health or whoever it might be that come in and say, we've got a different interpretation, that's where you come in.
Exactly. A little bit like travel insurance. You hope a lot of businesses see primary authorities like travel insurance in that they hope they don't need it, but they're glad it's there when it is there.
And I suppose from a development point of view, because especially in our sector with independent retailers, they're looking to try new things quite a lot. They're quite fleet of foot, quite innovative, quite able to change bits of the store very quickly. A lot of the time, the questions on a short advice are going to come from our side to you to say, one, is this assurable? Is there any potential for interpretation that is perhaps different in different authorities, and you know, can we cover this for retailers? I suppose there's a really good example of that from the first guide that we did, the tobacco display ban guide, which is back in 2013 now. I always go back to this because it's just an example of government not particularly paying attention to what happens in real life. But when we put the advice together for lots of retailers that phoned us up and had worries about this, the initial requirements on things like fonts and all that sort of stuff was in Helvetica.
Right.
And I always remember this because no one has Helvetica on their computer, but everyone has Arial. And they're, unless you are a graphic designer or you live in Shoreditch, you probably don't know the difference between Arial and Helvetica. But there are lots of retailers saying, like, I haven't got this font, really worried, sure, I'm worried about getting a visit. And so we were able to say, Arial is absolutely fine, don't worry about it. And that's a real-life example of something quite simple that just gives retailers a lot of peace of mind. In terms of where we are now, I would say pretty much the guides that we have cover just about everything that they can cover from a legislative perspective. What's on the horizon now that is going to be potentially really important for retailers to get their head around and is something that we are looking at assuring?
One of the things that is increasingly becoming more of an issue for us is around online sales of age-restricted products.
Yep.
And the use of digital ID.
Yes.
I personally... I mean, my son's 20 now, and he will leave the house without his wallet. He'll leave the house without his keys. He'll leave the house without any money, but he'll never leave the house without his phone. And so I personally believe that we do need to start thinking about underage sales in a different way from the perspective of the young people out there.
Yeah.
And adapt our systems where we can so that we have the best chance of preventing underage sales. That's the first one. The second
and
then, one...
And with that specifically, it's this is another thing where the advice is really important, because digital ID in store does not cover alcohol.
No.
And so when we're talking about age-restricted sales and, as you said, about Yoti, which I think is the main company that's doing this at the moment, this is not for alcohol. So it's other age-restricted products, but alcohol is covered by separate legislation and so still has very set requirements on what ID you can have, and that has to be in a physical form.
That's right. And we are engaging with the various groups to try and discuss this issue, because clearly it would make sense to have the same systems for all products. But by the same token, we understand the reservations that there are around that. In terms of online sales, this is a new area for us at ACS. This has been launched this year. It's the stuff around things like Deliveroo, Uber Eats, that sort of thing, where members are receiving orders for goods which might contain age-restricted products, wine or whatever, via the internet or by phone, and then they're being delivered to their homes. So what we've done at ACS, with ACS, is we've developed three different strands of advice for members looking to do that, which is based on either you take the delivery, you take the order yourself and deliver it yourself.
Yep.
You take the delivery yourself, and then you get a third party to deliver it, and that could be a taxi.
Sure. Okay.
And then you use a firm who does it all for you.
Yeah. So you essentially, in that third option, whether it's sort of Uber Eats, Deliveroo, that sort of model, essentially the retailer is acting as a supplier to that business.
That's right.
Yeah.
And of course, they're going to take a bigger cut.
Yes. Of course.
That is always a trade-off.
Yeah, so for the retailers that want to do it themselves, there's always going to be two steps to that ID verification, isn't there? Because you've got the orders placed online, and at that point you need to check that the person who has ordered it is over 18, and there are lots of online ways of doing that, and we talk about that in the guide. But then there is still that responsibility when you get to the door to check the ID of the person, check that person is 18 that is receiving those goods. And this is a good example, really, of in assured advice. A lot of the time, we tend to err on the side of caution.
Yeah.
And there might be some people that look at some of the guides and say that's probably a bit more than that we have to do. So, for example, again, age-restricted sales, we talk about Challenge 25 as a standard that we have assured.
Yeah.
There are good reasons for doing that because it eliminates a lot of the confusion, eliminates a lot of the risk, and it means that retailers can be confident in the procedures that they're following. Mm. And that's sort of the point, isn't it?
Yeah. And let's not forget, the assured advice scheme isn't a mandatory thing. Members don't have to subscribe to it. What we're saying is, if you are in the scheme and you do follow the advice, one of the additional things that you mentioned before, keeping a refusals book.
Yeah.
That's part of our advice. What we're saying is, if the members follow that are in the scheme and follow that advice, then we will support them if there's any change.
Yeah, that was what I was going to come on to next. So if I'm listening to this, I'm thinking, okay, assured advice sounds good. It sounds like there's lots of stuff there. I've read the guides, but I can't really be bothered to sign up to assured advice.
Okay.
I'm just going to read the guides and say, yeah, that's fine. What's the difference in my business? I'm following the guides. What's the difference when I get a visit, or if the worst happens, something goes wrong, between being signed up to assured advice and not being signed up to assured advice?
Sure. Effectively, as I said, think about it in terms of ducks lined up in a row. In order for assured advice to kick in, you need to be in the scheme. Advice needs to have been issued in that area.
Yep.
And you need to have followed that advice.
Yes.
And unless all those three are met, it's going to be the same as being on your own. That's the first
thing.
But if you have done all of those things, say you have stored your tobacco in the way as outlined in the guide, and an officer visits you and takes a different view to that, what it basically means is instead of you having to deal with that officer yourself, effectively we at Buxton, sorry, will effectively deal with that authority ourselves.
Yeah.
And we, 99 times out of 100, it's about officer to officer talking through issues, explaining what our rationale was, explaining how we got there. And at the end of the day, Chris, we're all on the same side.
Yeah.
That's how in reality it works. So we invite members to think about it in terms of it takes away a lot of the headache, but also takes away a lot of the worry.
Sure. Yeah, no, I get that. And having that support behind you is really important.
Sure.
And I suppose we have seen instances where it almost acts as a sort of mitigating factor as well. We say, look, something's gone wrong, but you know, we have all of this in place, and it is clear that this is a business that is trying its best to do the right thing, as opposed to just saying, what advice are you following?
Yeah.
Well, nothing really. And that's not very helpful.
No, it's not. And it's interesting that you say that, because going back to your question about where primary authority came from, primary authority was set up to reward businesses that invest in compliance. To your point about what I see the biggest issue being, I'd like to sort of round off on what I think it's going to be, but also ask you a question, Chris. So part of the amendments to the guides this year for food, we talked about the stuff that you can sell past its best before date.
Yes.
Because I think the big, and I'm not a genius by thinking this, obviously, it's all about waste, reducing plastics and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of that in different areas here.
And that's going to grow and grow. Mm-hmm. The assured advice now covers, well, clearly you can't sell a ham sandwich past its use-by date. You've got one, it's the day and that's it. But if you've got a packet of biscuits, if they reach their best before date, yes, you can sell them past that mm-hmm. date. And it is wasteful just to throw it in the bin just because it's gone past that date. So the guide has provided clarity on that.
And this is, so I'm hopefully not preempting your question. this is especially relevant for what we talked about earlier about Natasha's Law.
Sure.
Because we know that some members, when stuff gets to the end of its best before date, mm-hmm. not used by date, best before date, that they will, if they've got some sort of food to go or some sort of kitchen in the store, mm-hmm. they will use that food as ingredients to then make up soups or make up whatever it might be. That's going to cause some wrinkles with when you're making that food up, you have obviously having to have a list of full ingredients. At the moment, we're looking at that being pretty much fine when you're making things up from, I don't know, fruit or vegetables mm-hmm. or whatever it might be. But if you're making things up from other products that are then being broken down, the one thing I can think of is, say, for example, you've got a packet of biscuits mm-hmm. that goes to its end of its best before date. You then, and it's a packet of digestives. You break that down, make a cheesecake, put it on for sale.
Sure.
The question that I have, and I think we probably haven't not able to answer this yet, is when we're listing ingredients, mm-hmm. which we will have to do, do you list all the ingredients and one of the ingredients is biscuits, or do you list all the ingredients and all the ingredients is or everything that's in that packet? And I think that's something that is potentially going to cause some confusion among retailers, and as we go through the introduction of this law,
sure.
I think that's going to be quite an important thing to look at.
Sure. And whilst I can't answer that question specifically, it'd be wrong of me to, what I can say is that our guidance will reflect those practices.
Yes.
And you mentioned erring on the side of caution earlier. Sometimes if we'd like to use that pack of biscuits, but actually we can't because we're not entirely sure or can't represent all of those ingredients, if we had to, then it might be that we say, well, we don't use them for that purpose.
But sure.
There are still other ways of doing it. In terms of waste, one of our other partners, Waitrose, has now removed all 5p single-use plastic bags from stores, and its Oxford store is now going packaging-free, where they're dispensing things like coffee, wine, frozen pick and mix, even detergents, pastas, grains, and can even lend you a box to take things away.
Okay.
So my question to you...
Box of coffee, box of wine.
Yeah, box of wine.
Yeah.
You've been talking to my wife, haven't you?
Yeah.
my question back to you is, we know that your members have a strong desire to support the, you know, reduction in waste and so on. How open do you think they would be to initiatives like this?
It's a good question, and it's something that actually came up at Summit last year, so sure. 2018, when we did a film at Ancoats in Manchester. And they were saying that this was coming from the start of social media, where someone had gone into the store, had a look at the fruit and veg aisles and said, there's a load of packaging here, yeah. Why are you doing this? I'm not going to come back to the store unless you sort it out.
Right.
And they changed and they went pretty much packaging free and looked for a lot of their fruit and veg. And I think that had a really positive impact for them. It is definitely something that retailers are aware of. It's something that retailers are looking at, whether it's, and we're looking at advice of this on the moment, whether it's being able to offer free refills for water, yeah. and that kind of thing to minimise the impact of plastic waste, whether it's about plastic bags, as we talked about. We've been advocates for a long time of trying to eliminate single-use plastic bags, whether it's moving to Bags for Life or paper bags or hemp or Hessian bags, or all those sort of thing. But yeah, I think the only barrier to that, thinking about it from a retail perspective, is the fear of wastage. And I think some of that packaging, retailers feel is a bit of a safety net in able to, you know, make sure that things aren't spoiled and make sure that they last a bit longer. Mm. But there's definitely stuff that some retailers can do. And we go out on study tours all the time, and we see stores that have now the big dispensers of various things. It could be coffee, it could be nuts, granola, whatever it is. I think it's going to happen more often. But I suppose with everything, there's a balance to be struck between something that looks really good and it's a really nice thing to say you do, but doesn't actually sell at all.
Yeah.
And something that is, you know, really popular with customers and doesn't throw off their behaviour so much that they leave the store altogether. And I think that balance is shifting more towards people being accommodating for bringing their own packaging, bringing their own containers for things. Because that's the way it's going to have to go. I definitely, our sector has a part to play, and my initial view from talking to retailers is that most will be completely open to, you know, adapting their stores to be able to do this. And then, of course, when we've got this as more of a thing, there's all sorts of food safety, health safety advice that we can give, which is about how to make sure that there's no issues of cross-contamination and all that sort of thing. So,
pick a mixed fingers.
And yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's my favourite.
It's actually a really good example of how Assured Advice is going to continue helping retailers.
Sure. Interesting to say that. I thought you were going to say space would be the consideration, because we know that your members are quite unique in that space is a real premium for them. They're often operating in very tight areas as it is. And we talked a bit before offline about the bottle return scheme and how it's one thing to say we're going to do it, but where's the machines going to go and where are the bottles going to come back to?
Yeah, and we picked up on DRS actually as well. That's another one that's going to be really interesting from a health and safety, food safety perspective. Mm. We talked about lots of retailers doing food to go, doing those sorts of things. In Scotland, I know we talked about Scotland not being in the scope of Assured Advice, but it's something that we can definitely look at and learn from, where they are looking at including manual returns. That's going to cause a whole host of health and safety, food safety issues, where you've got people trying to do food to go and also trying to take back dirty bottles, cans, etc., back over the till. And if you're an environmental health officer, I think you probably have a field day by going in and looking at what would be happening there. So, yeah, absolutely, those concerns. And we talked about space. Space is a concern for the machines, but I think generally reducing packaging can only be good for space in stores, I would think. I think the tide is shifting towards less packaging. And I think when you get it right, you can probably get a range which is probably a bit better, a few more SKUs and a few more different products, because you're not encumbered by that packaging. So thanks for coming on, Phil. Really appreciate that.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
The last thing I'll say, just in closing, if you're a retailer that has had a visit, is expecting a visit from Trading Standards or Environmental Health or whoever it might be, if there's something that's come up where they've said, I'm not sure about this that you're doing in store, please let us know. Please give us a call. The office number is 01252 515 001, or at a minimum, please just take a look at our assured advice. It's acs.org.uk /advice, and it is really worth doing, because as we discussed, it does help when the worst happens. And at a minimum, if you get a new member of staff, the guides are a really useful basis for instructing them on how they can go about serving customers.
Well, we've had a lot of anecdotal evidence that businesses are using them as induction tools for new members of staff, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So I would say keep up to date with what's on the website, and like I say, any issues, please give us a call.